Hey, everybody. Welcome into Redacted on this Thursday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
So glad to have you all here on this show. We don't suffer fools, and we cover the stories the mainstream media does not. Tonight, we're going to be looking at the squatter story because illegal immigrants have found a loophole in our system, which is, hey, when you're away, cats will play. We will take over your home. It's being done to the tune of thousands of homes. You think, oh, there's just like a five or six of these. No. Thousands of American homes being taken over by squatters. We're going to look at where this is happening and why the open border crisis is causing this mass chaos.
Plus, the EPA is pushing electric vehicles on you with new stringent emissions. They're saying they're doing this for black people. Specifically, they're saying that. And so if you are against EVs, you're a racist. We're going to show you that.
Okay. Also, Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, teaming up to the tune of tens of billions of dollars, pushing a fake meat propaganda scam on all of us, getting us to eat fake meat. That's the plan. They don't want you eating real meat anymore. So I guess this is the plan that we're going to be looking at. So welcome in, everyone. Hope you guys are having a great Thursday. Welcome into Redacted. And thank you guys so much for subscribing to the channel and being a part of our community here. Every day when we're live, we really appreciate it. You can join us on Rumble. You can join us on YouTube and on X as well. So if I'm against EVs, then I'm a racist.
Yes, specifically. And okay. It's carbon emissions and transportation that is killing black people. The worst. The worst, they say.
All right.
Yeah.
Now, is the alternative, like, if I like my 4Runner, does that make me a white supremacist? I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, you're...
That would be the opposite. What does that make me? Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, you hate black people.
You're a racist for having
and brown people, they say. Right, exactly. Oh, that. Although
I'm very disappointed in myself.
I know.
Yeah, how did we hire a racist?
I don't know.
My gosh.
Although I will say, yesterday's prepper video that we did about how people of color are also preppers and the media is shocked about it. They say, oh, it must be because of Trump. The comments, I spent probably a good half hour reading the comments on that video, and I was so heartened at just how racist preppers are not. What a welcoming community. I just loved it. It was over my morning cup of coffee this morning. I'm like, these are really good people. They don't care at all about skin color. They want everybody to have some canned food in their basement.
A bunch of black preppers in the comments were like, yeah, you know, I've been prepping since I was from childhood. Like, where have you guys been? Like, going back to Jim Crow, we've been prepping our whole lives. Like, what is this? This is not new information.
It has nothing to do with skin color at all. It has to do with a universal commonality of wanting to protect your family and thinking about an uncertain future.
Yeah.
Yeah, the knitting community is the same way.
Are they?
They're so soft. They're so nice, those knitting community. All right, let's talk about this, shall we? Because imagine this. One day you wake up. And, you know, you make breakfast, you head to the airport, kiss your family goodbye. You're going on a work trip, right? Maybe they're coming with you. I don't know. You come home.
They have to come with you.
They'd have to come with you in this scenario. I guess I didn't think about it. So let me role play this again. So imagine this. You wake up, you take the family on a short vacation. Maybe you're working, but anyway, you leave your house for a few days, okay? And a few days later, you come home to find out there's illegal aliens living in your home, sleeping in your bed. Then you call the police because you think that's the right thing to do, right? To get this person out of my house. But thanks to squatters' rights and thanks to an incompetent prosecution system right now, the police can't do anything about it. And you're arrested for trespassing on your own home. That's exactly what's happening right now. Illegals know this, and it's happening all over the United States. This is not some isolated incident. Many states have very lax squatters laws. Every state is different. And illegal aliens are spreading this information to tell other illegal immigrants to find a vacant house and or one that has like a sign up like for rent. If you move in, guess what? You get to claim rights on that house, claiming squatter's rights. Here's one. This illegal immigrant posted this, and this has gone viral overnight, claiming that his friends have already taken over 7 houses and alerting other illegal immigrants, do this in the United States.
Mi gente, he pensado invadir una casa en United States. Ya que me enteré que existe una ley que dice que si una casa no está habitada, podemos expropiarla. Capichi, muchachos, aquí en United States también se aplica la de invasión de terreno. Y creo que ese será
mi próximo negocio. Invadir casas abandonadas, ya que me he buscado unos códigos con mis amigos africanos y me dijeron que ya llevan como 7 casas expropiadas. Y como dice el dicho, papi, hay que buscar la vuelta. Y la vuelta ahorita mismo es invadir casas, ya que nos encontramos en situación de calle y es la única manera que tenemos para no vivir en la calle y no ser una carga pública. Capichi, la ley dice que las casas abandonadas, deterioradas y que esté en mal estado, podemos llegar y repararlas, vivir en ella y si podemos venderla, hasta pedir créditos con ella. ¿Qué dicen ustedes?
Yeah. That's true. They teach you that in real estate school.
Right.
I have a real estate license.
You have a real estate license. This was taught. You can study this in where you got it, New Jersey specifically. But this is all over the United States, and every state's laws are different. So did he say anything inaccurate there?
No. And in fact, one of the most lenient states for squatters' rights to become property owners is Texas. It has one of the shortest habitation laws.
Yeah, and so does California.
Yeah.
So, but here's the thing, right? So forget the laws for a second. Forget like squatters laws, because some of you might be lawyers out there and you might be saying, yeah, but the laws are this, 5 years, you have to be in the property, et cetera. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter at all, actually, what the squatters laws are, because these individuals can take over these homes and the prosecution right now is so lax. The police force is not dealing with this, and this is not even rising up to the level of anything that they're concerned about. So forget even the laws. They're just living in homes and can take over these homes, and you have no recourse about it. The New York Post reports that over 1,200 homes have already been taken over by squatters in the Atlanta area, turning homes into drug dens, strip clubs, and more. Squatters take over 1,200 homes in Atlanta. Illegal strip clubs terrorize neighborhoods. Is this even America? The New York Post headline says. One homeowner came home, didn't know what to do, and he saw prostitutes in his home. He just ran out of there.
I didn't walk in on a family eating dinner. I walked in on weapons, a prostitute, a bunch of dogs in the back. I just jumped the fence and ran. I didn't know what else to do.
I mean, imagine that he can like laugh about it, or I mean, because what else are you going
to
do? I mean,
because he lived to tell.
Yeah. Yeah, they could have shot him or so, or you know, who knows, right? In another incident, you go ahead, Phil. Go ahead, David.
Well, I was going to say they encourage people to use the court system to take care of this, but a lot of these, like some of these people are just, it's like an investment property that to be a little bit extra income and some kind of, you know, thing for their legacy, and they can't afford to go through the court system. But that's like the only thing they say, oh, just take them to court.
Right. So then what happens in the months that you're taking someone to court? You have no rights to that home. You're trespassing on that home.
In New Jersey, we had a renter who had not paid rent in 2 years and couldn't even get her off the property. And we owned it. She had a lease that she had not paid. And I still could not get the police to enforce, to evict her.
Yeah.
No matter what, right?
And we had to use lawyers, go through the whole process.
Yeah,
through an eviction process.
It was super expensive and stressful.
And that's a typical eviction process.
Right.
Right? So what they're saying is don't even sign a lease. Don't even use the normal eviction process. Don't use a lease. Don't get a lease. Don't sign a lease. Just break into the house.
Well, my point is, if you can't even evict formal renters, and then you absolutely are not going to be able to evict someone who's not. And a new report today shows that at least 200,000 migrant deportation cases were thrown out just because the U.S. didn't properly file its paperwork. Wazowski. So you think that, you know, we're going to be able to enforce laws, squatters laws, when we can't even properly enforce deportation cases?
Of course not. You know, as J.J. Carroll pointed out on our show yesterday, they're not vetting any of these individuals. The system isn't completely overwhelmed. They're not doing any of this. You think they have some sort of proper paperwork? No, they don't have any of this. In another incident, U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Dahlia Dower was on deployment, came home to her home, and found convicted criminals squatting in her home.
Oh, that's a way to protect veterans. Well, they go overseas.
So they're overseas. Yes, they're overseas on deployment. They come home and their home is literally taken over by an invasion army. Like, can you think about, just think about the irony in that for a moment.
That's wild.
Now, this is happening all over the country. Here's Houston.
A group of trespassers is living in a Houston woman's home, and she doesn't know how to get them out. That house was listed for lease, but when some prospective tenants went for a visit last week, they found a group of people living inside.
Yeah, it's going to make it difficult for you to lease that home. And so this is the strategy, right? Find these homes that are listed for rent, I guess, listed for lease. Call up your illegal immigrant friends and say, hey, 123 Main Street, you know, let's smash in the window. Let's kick in the door. Let's move in. And now that property is under their control.
Even if you are somehow able to get them out with the county sheriff or something, we know, as when we've had squatters in properties that we have been in between renters before, they mess it up completely. They don't take good care of it. We've had just thousands of dollars in damages before. Someone pooped in the vents and we had to get specific types of cleaners in there to remember that.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah. So they're going to destroy the property.
Yeah.
I mean, this is exactly what's going to happen. They're going to destroy the property. And, you know, the United States has a housing crisis to begin with. There's not enough homes in the United States for Americans. We need 3 million units, 3 million homes just for Americans, not illegal immigrants. Homeowners or builders have been slowed down. You know, the pandemic slowed everything down, right? So they couldn't build, couldn't get materials. And now that they finally got caught back up again, of course, we have higher interest rates. Now we've got an economy that's, you know, clamped down for millennials that can't afford homes. So we have a housing crisis. We have an affordable housing crisis in the United States to begin with. Now, on top of it, add in a layer of illegal immigrants who need a place to live.
The government truly hates property owners. They hate you.
Apparently, even though the tax code is written to benefit property owners, right? The idea of the American dream. But forget it. Maryland, same thing. Maryland residents come home, find out squatters living in her bedroom, catches them on camera. They sold off all of her private belongings, $49,000 in stuff that they cleaned out of the house and sold. And she there confronts them, like right in the house. And finally, it's like they wake up and they're sleeping in the middle of the afternoon. And then I guess they left. But nevertheless, $49,000 in material sold off. A woman in Maryland came home from vacation, found squatters sleeping in her bed. And again, you know, can you imagine that, walking in and seeing these people just asleep in your bed?
No.
I would freak. I mean, I would do worse than that, beyond just freak, and I certainly wouldn't run away. This video, of course, over the past 48 hours has gone viral. This is an unbelievable story of a woman who's like going to confront them, calls the police, like there's squatters in this property. And then she, the owner, gets arrested for trespassing on her own property.
Here, this guy just forced himself into my house.
No, he did not.
Yes, he did.
No, he didn't.
And so did you.
Ma'am.
You broke through the front door.
Officer.
The man called the police on her.
So why is it that I have to leave and he doesn't have to leave?
Because technically he can't be kicked out. We need to go to court.
They consider this a landlord-tenant issue. And by law, it has to be handled through the housing court, not with police.
Dell, you're getting arrested right now?
I'm being arrested.
For what?
For being in my own home.
That's crazy.
This is America. What the hell is happening?
A landlord-tenant issue?
Yeah. And again, this is the issue, right? Well, we don't know. It's a landlord-tenant issue. You got to deal with it in the court system. And so they know how to play the game. They know how to play the game, which is to take advantage of this whole process right now. So in the meantime, we can literally be going back and forth with lawyers. If they have lawyers, they have some sort of an immigration attorney. Who knows? Back and forth. This can happen for months, if not years. And this person who owns the home is out of a home that they either rent out or even live in because they were on vacation. Go ahead, David.
Well, I said they got through with a loophole on this one because they were trying to get them to produce a lease. They didn't have one. And he produced a bill of something that he had paid for that had that address on it. So that was all the cops needed.
Yeah. Well, exactly. So they could show some sort of paperwork if they have something that they can show where they can lay claim to the property. And again, I come back to the purely squatter's rights laws, right, that you would learn about in real estate school that are on the books. I've covered stories like this back when I was at Fox. I interviewed people who were, Florida had very lax, it seemed like at the time, squatter's laws where people just could go into a home and it was almost impossible for the banks to get them out of there. They couldn't get these people out of there.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, just based purely on the laws itself, it's keeping these people in these homes.
Right.
And you have no recourse.
I had a pool teammate that he was homeless, basically had to live with his girlfriend for well over a year because he had rented a room out to somebody. And that guy filed a restraining order on him, ended up with the house. So the guy that owned the house, because he just rented a room to somebody, and that guy like got a restraining order. He couldn't go into his own house for well over a year. So he had to live at his girlfriend and that guy just lived there. And the courts were just like, no, just running a room out.
Now in America, forget the illegal immigrant part of it. Like what you just described is what we would call in the real estate world, like a professional tenant, like someone who knows how to game the system. Right. And so the move in, not pay rent, and then like go through the eviction process, but they don't care. They'll just keep like going back and forth, getting like, you know, paperwork.
They just
signed.
Buy themselves time to hop from place to place. And as soon as they get another place, then they know they've got at least 2 years before an eviction is filed.
And they can break into a home, show fake paperwork. Now they're technically a tenant in this new house. They don't even have paperwork. They never actually signed a lease, but they're taking advantage of the system. So this is all back to the open border. And Mexico saying, you know, you guys have this open border on your side. This is allowing this to flow. Unless you close it down, this is going to continue to flow into Biden's America.
Caught on camera, the moment migrants made a run to the border. You can hear people cheering, whistling, and celebrating that they can see their end goal in sight, El Paso. You can hear migrants chanting, "We are united," and one migrant telling the cameras, quote, "We're not doing anything to you," end quote. Francisco Guarduño is the migration delegate on the Mexican side of the border, and he says migrants making their way to the southern border will always be an issue if the United States continue to allow their open border policy.
As long as the United States continues to open the doors of its border and exceptionally allow passage to some groups, families, minors, vulnerable people, it is a call for more migrants to come.
Over the last couple of weeks, migrants have been riding on top of freight trains from central to northern Mexico as they make their way to the southern border.
So the USA Today has also broken down a number of these states where this is all happening. And to hear it from the USA Today, which of course is a liberal rag and an awful newspaper, but in this situation, they've actually cataloged exactly how this has unfolded. So prosecutors and politicians play a critical role in these scams. Local authorities have done little to assist homeowners for a variety of reasons, from political calculations to negligence. Instead, they force landowners to go into overtaxed housing courts. Exactly, right? And notoriously slow dockets. It often takes months or years to get an eviction order. So they know how to play these games, right? And they're telling them, well, we can't deal with it. So you just go and figure it out through the court system. No prosecution as well, because the people involved in committing crimes from breaking and entering to fraud to forgery, yet they're rarely prosecuted. Squatting is not a particularly difficult problem to solve. It simply requires police and prosecutors to enforce existing laws. But they can't.
And most of them are undocumented, so you can't put this on their record. So if they then go to get another place, or it won't show up on any record of behavior at all. It's not trackable.
And the problem is, exactly, once they actually start signing leases and become trackable, that's the problem. So they're being encouraged to not sign any of this stuff. Yeah. Like, don't have a paper trail, essentially. Just move into these houses. The common nuisance of squatting, the USA Today writes, it reflects a breakdown in basic deterrence of our laws. Property offenses have been steadily downgraded as priorities in many cities, while prosecutions are viewed as politically risky for officials who do not want to be viewed as targeting people who are homeless.
I thought we're not supposed to call them homeless anymore. We're supposed to call them the unhoused, but okay.
I don't know. It's not just happening in the United States. Like Europe, if you think you're free from this, you're not. Squatters have been occupying buildings throughout Europe, doing the same thing in protests. This was a story in Berlin, where squatters occupying a series of buildings in Berlin saying, you know, we were taking over these residential buildings, you know, and we can't afford to live here. So we're just going to take over these buildings. You can't do anything about it. So it's happening in Europe as well.
And there's really no, like, what's a way to prevent it? Like, what is something people could do to prevent it? I don't think there is anything other than do not leave your home.
Well, I mean, you get a security system for one, you know, that way you can be there to stop it happening, right?
I'm thinking a pit bull.
Yeah.
Get
a dog, get a dog, get a gun, arm yourself, make sure, you know, protect yourself, band together as a community. You know, this is the importance of neighbors, having a strong community, neighbors keeping an eye out on properties. You know, hey, you're gone. Mm-hmm. Let your neighbors know that you're going to be traveling for the next few days on business. Like, keep an eye out on our house. If you notice anything weird,
right,
you know, step in, do what you can do. But it's unbelievable. But a lot of this is, you know, flowing right from Mexico. And I just co-authored a new report on this specifically. Some of the things we talk about in this report, we cannot talk about on YouTube. They're not happy with it. And it literally is how the U.S. government nonprofit organizations are banding together these NGOs, working with these Mexican cartels and human traffickers, and flowing right into the United States. So you can go grab this free report. I encourage all of you to read it. You can share it with people who don't know what's going on. Just go to redacted.inc/Mexico. It's unbelievable. And the Biden administration is totally facilitating this right under our noses, and in order to bring in additional voters and to completely destabilize the United States.
I have a few other ideas because I watched Home Alone for how to make sure that this doesn't happen to your house.
Get some, put some tacks on the ground.
Some glue and nails facing upwards on your stairs. Yeah.
In case Joe Pesci breaks in.
Right. Yeah,
but actually, I've actually heard about, like, read stories of that, though, where people have booby trapped their house for something like that and they go to jail.
Yes.
But that's
Kevin McAllister would not be safe in the year 2024.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy, right? You try to protect your own house and you're not there and someone breaks in and you get in trouble for it. I mean, you're in trouble for trespassing on your own property, kicking some of these people out.
Yeah.
They got to change these laws. I mean, another way, David, to answer David's question, we've got to force these states to change their laws on the books, and also have prosecution and have enough money going into prosecution teams and law enforcement to stop this. When you defund the police and you pull back on prosecutions and you push this aside, like, oh, this is just a housing court issue.
Right.
No, it's not. It's not a house. This is a crime.
Yeah, and it's not just white people that are being pushed out of their homes so we can celebrate because it's the end of colonialism. Like, these are black people.
Literally having their homes taken over.
It's everybody. It's not a racial issue here. It's about the fact that it seems true that globalists want you to own nothing and they don't have respect for your private property because owning something means they own. If you own nothing, they own you. Yeah. And that's what we're moving towards. So let us know what you think of this. Well, the Biden administration is pushing electric vehicles on you, and they're doing it for black people, or so they say. They are literally saying this. The EPA made an announcement about major emissions limits, which push car makers to make more EVs, even if they don't want to, which they don't. And the Biden administration saying this is all being done in the name of racial justice. Here yesterday, the EPA made this announcement in Washington, and they had an NAACP, an environmental justice organizer named Asada Rashidi. She kicked off this announcement and made it very clear that this is all about the health of black and brown people.
Today marks a positive step forward in protecting communities like mine and paving the way for a healthier and sustainable future where black and brown families can thrive. And at this time, I am honored to have the opportunity to introduce Michael S. Regan, the 16th Administrator of the United States Environmental Protection Agency, the first black man and the second person of color to ever lead the EPA.
All right, this was an exciting event, you can tell.
Wow.
Now, they are they're race baiting you into accepting EVs. And the implication is if you don't accept EVs, you don't care about communities of color. What she says then is that because she comes from Newark, and Newark is a polluted crap hole. It is. We used to live in Essex County. Her family suffered from ill health, which I don't doubt. Poor communities do, in fact, suffer more ill health, and racial minorities are more likely to live in those communities. But the EPA is then making the leap that if there were more electric vehicles in her Newark neighborhood, her family would have better health, not accounting for oh, what food is in lower income communities? What education is there, right? Nothing else matters. It's just that her brothers must have asthma because they live near an airport.
The arsenic and lead that's in Essex County
water.
Oh
my God, the water there absolutely is the worst in the country.
Yeah, Essex County has the worst water source. So, but she's concerned about electric vehicles.
Right, and in fact, officials in Essex County went to jail for falsifying the chemicals in the water. So, okay, none of that is true, right? Just they're using her to pretend they can solve one thing and make Newark a better place to live. Except Newark is run on gas-powered plants, so more EVs in that neighborhood would be plugged into this gas-powered plant, which would not reduce air pollution. It would increase it, in fact. And economists know that you can improve the health and environment of low-income groups by increasing their overall wealth, by increasing GDP overall, and quality of life. In fact, you can't just pick one thing and try to improve it. You have to focus on overall improvement of life. So this is not how you stand up for racism, just choosing one thing. Here's Bjorn Lomborg's book saying, on the most basic level, a nation with higher GDP per person is likely to have citizens who live longer. People and the state can afford better health care, nutrition, and safety, and have a host of other advantages that reduce death risks. It's not just because there are gas-powered cars. So high GDP per person correlates to higher education rates and lower child mortality because families and communities can afford better education and better health care to prevent and treat disease. So they're baiting us. They're race baiting us with this EV announcement. And if being against an EV makes you a racist, okay, I don't know if you want to accept that or not, but let's take a look at what they're trying to do. I mean, just imagine the hardworking people of Newark who then have their economy screech to a halt because they can't make deliveries. They can't take a job call. They can't get deliveries of the things that they need to run their business. That's racist, I think, if you really want to break it down, but okay. And Newark won't be getting a growing economy because climate activists shut down an additional power plant. So we don't really care if their economy grows at all. Now, affordable energy, of course, raises the quality of life, period. And yet the EPA is moving forward with this, trying to just screech the economy to a halt with electric vehicles. Here are the new emission standards that will inevitably make it harder to buy a gas-powered car in the not too distant future. They're calling it the strongest ever pollution standards, and many are calling it a cover to eliminate gas-powered cars. And in fact, it limits the amount of carbon that each car can have per mile by 2027. And since gas-powered cars just can't meet those standards yet, it would mean that car companies then have to make more EVs to average it out. Here's what the Wall Street Journal said, saying that, for instance, a gas-powered pickup emits 430 grams of carbon per mile, but under this rule, trucks will have to average 184 grams per mile in 2027, and then it reduces from there. So then the companies will effectively have to produce 1 to 2 electric trucks for every gas-powered one in 2027. The ratio will be closer to 4 to 1 in 2032. They're calling this preserving of consumer choice. But how can it be when the only choice will be electric? Except they can make these 4 to 1 EVs to gas power cars. That doesn't mean people will buy them. We see right now people are just not. In fact, the journal says that EVs made up less than 8% of new car sales last year, half of which, so a full 4%, was Tesla. And Tesla is a vanity purchase. People are not necessarily buying it because they love EVs. And that's what a group of car dealers told the Biden administration last November when they said, please stop the EV mandates. We cannot sell them. Here is a video we showed you last year of Tom Maioli from Celebrity Motor Car, one of the dealers who signed this letter, explaining just how they're sitting on the lots to CNBC.
And this is basically the voice of the consumer. This is not the dealer. This is the voice of the consumer. And what's happening is the manufacturer is being forced to produce these EVs. They're shipping them to the dealerships and they're backing up on the lots. You know, our average day supply pre-COVID was 60 to 90 day supply of inventory. During COVID, it was less than 30 because of the supply chain issues. We're now backed up to 12 months with EVs. Consumers don't want them. They're not buying them. We have up to $15,000 in rebates from the manufacturer and $7,500 tax credits. We're talking $22,500.
That's crazy. And right, we heard all about this during COVID, how, oh my gosh, car prices, used cars. There was such a demand for cars. We need these cars. Everyone wants a car. And now we have so many of them. And no one wants them.
Right.
There should be a wake-up call for people. We saw this, of course, in Canada, where Pierre Poilievre is saying on the conservative side, no, we're seeing this fleet of electric vans and emergency vehicles and so forth that you're trying to turn into, and then a deep freeze occurs, and they don't work.
Yeah.
Or the battery life is severely constrained by cold weather. Yeah. Right? The technology is not there. And then, of course, the infrastructure and the grid technology is all a sham to begin with.
Right. And it very much matters how they're charged. And we don't have clean energy right now because the United States doesn't give that much of a care about nuclear energy, which could, in fact, power these cars cleanly, but they choose not to. House Speaker Mike Johnson called this new EPA rule misguided. He said this is another radical anti-energy crusade that will limit consumer choices, raise costs on American families, and devastate auto manufacturers. More regulation and higher costs are the opposite of what our country needs to do. And so he's urging the Biden administration to reverse course immediately. And, you know, I know that whatever you're going to cast your vote for this election season is probably not electric vehicles or not, but it does make this an election year issue because undoubtedly President Trump will repeal these rules. President Biden will leave them in place. So let us know how much this weighs into your choices this year, how much you care about this, what you think, because this is a, we'll see.
Well, yeah. And President Trump the other day, of course, in his bloodbath comments, talking about the American auto industry and how important it is for us to build up the American auto industry and get back to a level of prominence again, instead of relying on Chinese and flooding through Mexico and all of this stuff. So, President Trump's already vowed to roll back a huge percentage of these green initiatives, mm-hmm. which is just a big, massive boondoggle for Wall Street. It has nothing to do with actually helping America in any capacity.
Clearly not.
So anyway, let us know your thoughts on that. Okay, we've got more news to get to on your Thursday. We're going to look at the Fed. So I don't know if you noticed, overnight, gold prices have hit a new all-time high. The highest it's ever been overnight, over $2,200 an ounce for gold right now. The Fed Chief Jerome Powell speaking yesterday, saying we're going to have 3 interest rate cuts in this year, but also admitting some stuff kind of under his breath about inflation. So this like stickiness of inflation is here to stay, perhaps, and not going to be near this 2% target anymore. Kevin DeMeritt from Lear is going to join us. We're going to talk about gold. We're going to talk about what does this mean for American jobs. And we're also going to talk about what it means for the American economy, because the Biden administration keeps telling us we're in the best economy we've seen ever. Well, where's this disconnect with American workers right now who can't afford rent and groceries are still skyrocketing? So there's a huge disconnect, maybe the crushing of the middle class. We'll get to that in just a moment.
But first, we want to tell you about our show sponsor over at Aura, because if you are inundated with an overwhelming number of spam calls and spam emails, may feel like an invasion by unknown companies trying to tell you things you don't want or scam you. It's exhausting, I know, but it turns out that data brokers are selling your personal information and making a fortune from it. So they're doing it on purpose. That's your name, home address, health records, your relatives, your full name, all of that stuff. Aura is a game changer, though. They're not just putting a Band-Aid on the problem. They're getting the root of it and pulling it out. Aura doesn't just block spam calls and emails. They go to the source and stop these data brokers from selling your information from the first place. If you've ever tried to manually opt out of data broker lists, you know it can be difficult and lengthy. This is just a bunch of other features. This is one of many features that they offer, like antivirus, VPN, password management, and even identity theft insurance. All of this bundled into one simple, affordable package. So please try them out. You can get a 2-week free trial by going to our link. It's aura.com/redacted. That's aura.com/redacted. Can't hurt to check them out. Get a 2-week free trial. Also, you can click the link below the description of this video. So give it a shot and take back your privacy with aura.com/redacted.
Well, the most powerful man in America is a man by the name of Jerome Powell. He's an unelected central banker, and he just spoke yesterday about what the Fed intends to do, either, you know, get us out of a recession or put us right in the middle of one.
Inflation has eased substantially while the labor market has remained strong, and that is very good news. But inflation is still too high.
So on those words, gold skyrocketed to an all-time high, and last night the stock market also hit new highs across the board. Rally was the name of the day. So what's really going on here? Kevin DeMeritt is the CEO of Lear Capital. We'd like to check in with Kevin every few months to see what's going on in this economy. Kevin, good to see you.
Good to be back, Clayton.
So an interesting day, because I feel like we're in the moment really of have and have nots right now. You have a lot of people saying, I can't rub two pennies together right now. Can't rub two nickels together right now to be able to afford my rent. My grocery bills are going up. I'm paying more for just about everything. Jerome Powell yesterday admitting basically that inflation targets of 2% not going to happen. Like, we're cutting, throwing the towel in on that. It's going to be higher. But yet we're hearing from the Biden administration that this is a booming economy, that everything is great. So there really seems to be a total disconnect here. What did you make of Powell's comments yesterday?
Well, I think he's absolutely on track as far as you're probably going to have to lower interest rates sooner rather than later. So I think he's predicting three decreases in interest rates. He sees a recession coming, and so do a lot of billionaires and the people that I'm speaking to. There is a recession coming. If you look at the statistics and the indicators that usually will tell you if a recession is coming, like an inverted yield curve with a 100% track record of being correct, there's a recession coming. On top of that, there's a couple of other indicators that I think Jerome Powell is really looking at, one being the money supply. Look, money is like gas in a car. You need it to run the economy. So if you get a pullback in M2, where the money supply M2, which is really money in a checking account, your savings account, and certificates of deposit, money markets, things like that. Okay, so that's M2. You don't see it shrink usually, Clayton. It doesn't come down too much. But when it comes down just a couple of percent, it has large ramifications. And it's only come down that 2% four times in the last 150 years. And each time that it's done that, there's been a recession or a depression and double-digit unemployment. Okay, so that's one.
Wow.
The other is commercial bank lending. When commercial bank lending decreases by 2% or more, which has only happened three times since 1973, you get a recession. So not only do we have an inverted yield curve with a 100% predictability rate, we have commercial lending off by more than 2%, and we have the M2 money supply off by more than 2%. It's a scary situation for him, because that usually signals a big recession, depression, 2008. Something big usually comes when all three of those indicators are going in the wrong direction.
And we see, of course, also hiring. Hiring has been slowing. A lot of small businesses now saying that, when you had people quitting, the quit index, right? So a lot of people saying they're going to quit. And they could usually then go and get another job. But now a lot of small businesses saying they're pulling back on a lot of hiring right now, which is also incredibly troubling. You talk about the inverted yield curve, which for our audience, maybe they don't understand exactly what that is. It's what bond investors are expecting, right, in terms of long-term interest rates and longer-term interest rates. So a lot of the people that would be investing in these longer-term bonds are saying, we see trouble on the horizon.
Yeah, basically an inverted yield curve means that the longer end of the curve, so 30 years out, is actually lower. They're paying less interest than the current one-year, two-year notes. So what that's really saying is the long-term guys, the long-term bond guys think, hey, there's a recession coming. He's going to have to lower interest rates. So we're betting that interest rates are going to be lower out longer dated than where we are today. That's what usually signals a recession. And bond guys in my world are much smarter than the stock guys. They really have to pay attention to the economy. They're just debt to corporations, the government debt, so on and so forth. So they're paying much better attention. They don't get so caught up in the frenzy and the buying. at all-time highs like we're starting to see in the stock market right now. So much smarter guys, in my opinion.
I mean, so Powell really seemed, I mean, he's walking a fence here. I mean, really seems like you want the ultimate fence walking, tightrope walking moment right now because, but you know, the Biden administration, of course, absolutely does not want a recession. So pressuring the Fed, we've got to cut interest rates. We've got to allow people to get in their homes, buy real estate, pay less for a car, all of that. We've got cars sitting on the lots right now. People can't afford them. People are swimming in credit card debt. And yet the Biden administration telling us everything is golden. I think in the commercial real estate, I think you bring up a great point. You have so much in the commercial real estate market right now is crumbling. And a lot of these small banks, you're talking to seeing small banks folding as well, right? Because they can't, I mean, these loans are coming due and no one's going back to work. They're not going in these office buildings.
Yeah, there's going to be another bank crisis. In my personal opinion, it's not just me. I mean, there's a lot of people out there talking about a bank crisis, but there's $1.5 trillion of commercial real estate maturing by the end of 2025. I just ran this report on the debt maturing in the next 18 months. You have New York, which tops the list at about $40 billion. And these are loans that are horrible. They're high risk loans and they're probably default. They'll probably default. So New York's about $40 billion. Los Angeles is $18 billion. Miami at $13 billion. Vegas at $10 billion. San Francisco at about $12 billion. You have a lot of these loans. My building that I'm in right now is 20% vacant. If they go and try to get a bank loan on this thing, they couldn't do it. The vacancy rate is too high for the bank to give a loan at the same loan value that is on this building today. So they're going to have to come up with whatever it is, $300-400 million, some number to drop the value of the loan, and you can't do it. And so these banks are stuck. I don't know what they're going to do, but some of them are going to go out of business, and there's going to be a lot of consolidation in the banking industry in the next year and a half, in my opinion.
I think you're right about that. I think a lot of these small banks are going to be gobbled up. They're going to be gobbled up by the big boys, which is exactly what they want. It's all part of their plan. And I think, I'm saying this, and this may sound like a conspiracy theory to people, but we're moving towards a digital currency, and they want this money supply to be tight so there's not actual currency floating around out there. They want to be able to control the currency. They can print as much of it as they want, and they want to move us towards a digital currency. And I think, is that why you think we're seeing gold hitting an all-time high? Like, what do you think accounts for this huge move into gold and silver right now?
Yeah, I think there's 34 trillion reasons that, the gold market is at all-time highs. But on top of that, you have Mark Zuckerberg sold $500 million worth of his stock. Jeff Bezos is selling his stock. Warren Buffett has sold $168 billion or has $168 billion in cash ready to deploy because he's afraid to deploy it at this particular point. Michael Dell has $500 million that he sold. And Jamie Dimon, for the first time in 18 years, has sold JP Morgan stock. First time in 18 years. The top pick at JP Morgan in the commodity section is gold, predicting at $2,500 an ounce. That's about 12% higher than we trade at today. And if you look at the debt, Clayton, people are afraid of the debt. They can't, it's unfathomable that we are printing $1 trillion every 100 days. So there are a lot of different reasons that people are nervous about the economy and piling into gold and piling into the Bitcoin, which is skyrocketing along with it.
100 days, we're adding another trillion. I mean, we have the debt clock that we keep above us here on the show, on the set, shows our national debt. So 100 days is adding $1 trillion. I remember when I was in high school many moons ago, back in the early 1990s, and hearing about the debt, and we were approaching a certain level of trillion, and we were trying to all wrap our heads around it in my social studies class. And now we're adding that every 100 days.
Yeah. To give people some sort of an indication here, 1 trillion seconds is 31 years. At the end of this year, we are going to add 100 years of debt at $1 trillion, every 100 days. It is unfathomable. They're printing money so like it's water out there. I just don't understand how people are not more nervous about moving their money over to hard assets, the real estate market, the commodity, or, you know, gold and silver, the real estate market. I mean, you cannot hold paper money at this particular point.
I hope people are paying attention. We've been saying this for years on this show. I've been trying to educate people about it. Owning real estate, owning gold, owning silver, owning actual tangible assets, hard assets, which have been around for 5,000 years as a currency, as a way of doing business, right? Going back to the Roman Empire, for crying out loud, owning real estate, gold and silver. So it's survived all manners of governments collapsing, and every fiat currency in world history has collapsed. What makes people think the U.S. dollar is not going to be in that pile of rubble? I mean, what do you say? I see people commenting from time to time and saying, you know, well, yeah, the gold market, though, is manipulated just like the rest of it. You know, the gold market's manipulated. So can you really put your money in hard assets like that? What if I need to sell it? What if I need to? And I always remind people, you know, Natalie and I are big investors in gold and silver. If I need to sell it for some other reason, I can do it within a few days. Like, it's held offsite in a storage facility. I can sell it in a few days and it's converted and I can make a transaction, right?
Absolutely. I mean, gold's the most liquid investment on the entire planet. If I'm in Hong Kong or England or here in the United States or over in Portugal, the gold is worth what it's worth. I can sell it anywhere at any time. You can't do that with a piece of real estate. You can sell it in the United States, but it's tough to sell someplace else. You can't do that with diamonds. You have to go get them assayed all over again. You can't do that with, you know, stock a lot of times. So yeah, it's incredibly liquid. And when we saw 2008 and some of these corrections, that's what people used as it was moving up as a hedge to then go buy stocks at lower prices or real estate at lower prices. It gave them the liquidity that they needed in times when liquidity wasn't there for them, especially on the real estate side, Clayton. 2008, we have a lot of real estate investors, as you know, and you know, either A, they had a tough time paying because people weren't paying them their rent, so they used precious metals as a way to liquidate that and pay the mortgage, or, you know, some of the guys that had great pieces of real estate and people were paying, when the real estate fell, they used the gold to go out and buy real estate when gold was high and real estate was low. So incredibly liquid.
Well, I'll get you out of here on this, Kevin. I know we've been talking about target prices for gold. So as an investor, I'm excited. The idea Bank of America, I think, has a $3,000 price target for gold. Maybe it's higher than that. You just mentioned Goldman Sachs. You guys put together a $3,200 gold report that people can get if they go to LearRedacted.com. You've made it available for our audience and people want to read about price targets. Can you talk a little bit about why you're seeing this over $3,000 price target for gold?
Yeah, so if you look at the debt, and we look at correlations, right? No different than the inverted yield curve or the money supply and the commercial credit that we were talking about. You're looking for things that are predictable. So there's a 92% predictability rate of where the U.S. debt stands and where the gold price stands, and that is a 92% correlation. Where we are today, the price of gold should trade at $3,200. So if you look over history, if gold's higher than that correlation, it's a good time to sell it. If it's lower than that correlation, then it's a good time to usually purchase. So you look back in, you know, 2018, 2019, when gold kind of skyrocketed and was up in the $2,000 range, you know, it should have been in the 2000 or 1600, $1,700 range, good time to sell, and it did pull back. So this correlation is explained in our package of information so people can understand it, because you want that kind of predictability with your investing, right? We want to buy low, sell high. So that's in there, and they can give us a phone call or go to LearRedacted.com. It's debt and $3,200 gold. We have our gold investors kit so people can understand how to take physical delivery, how to sell, how to store it if they would like to store it, and even how to move their IRA over to physical gold if they would like to do that, their IRA or the 401k. And then we have some fun, you know, always love to be on the program and do something fun with your audience. So we have a fun gift, which is the old $1 silver certificate. So I bought a bunch of silver, old silver Morgan dollars that I love, and there was 50 silver certificates in there. And it was way back when the dollar was actually backed by silver. So look, they're worth $5 a piece. It's not going to change anyone's life, but it's fun to show your kids that our dollar used to be backed by gold or silver. So, you know, kind of fun to pull out and talk to people about. So we're going to throw the first 50 people who either call us or go to LarryDacted.com. We're going to throw in one of those silver certificates for them as well.
Oh, that's cool. I know you were texting earlier saying you've got these free gifts for the audience. So that's nice. That's nice. Our audience is smart. I know many of them are gold investors. Many of them are silver investors. So they can take advantage of that. They can give you guys a call at the 800 number there. You guys have been great partners for us for many, many years. So just real quick, I said I was going to get you out of here a second ago, but between gold and silver, like, what do you think is the big play right now? We just see gold at all-time highs. If I'm a big silver investor as well, do you think, you know, and it's cheap, I mean, relatively speaking, compared to gold, what do you think, you know, silver's a smarter play here or gold is a smarter play?
You know, if you're looking for profit, silver is like falling out of a basement window. I mean, you're just not going to get hurt, right? It's too low. So where the price of gold is, the last time gold was near its record highs, you know, the silver market was $47 an ounce and you're trading at around $24-$25 an ounce today. So based on the fact that I believe there is going to be a recession and those recessions usually push silver much higher, I would invest in silver. And if a recession doesn't happen, Clayton, then you have 100 million ounces of silver literally leaving the market in the solar industry each year. So the price is going to continue to move up. So absolutely love the silver from a profit play.
Yeah, from a profit play, also a commodities play right now. The demand is off the charts for everything that we need right now and these products that the Biden administration is pumping billions of dollars into right now for solar panels and everything else. So, Kevin, we always appreciate you joining us, giving us some perspective on the Fed's comments. As always, we'll keep our eyes on what this recession portends for the United States and as the U.S. dollar continues to be deflated with the money printing machine that they've got in Washington. Kevin, great to see you. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Clayton.
All right, thanks so much, Kevin. And yeah, you can grab that free gold report, $3,200 an ounce. We've been talking about it for quite a while here. You can go to LearRedacted.com to grab that free gold report. I mean, when we started investing in precious metals, I mean, like a couple of years ago, and we see all of these price targets, $3,000 through $3,200. And when they want to get rid of U.S. currency and move towards a digital currency, I think you're going to see this continue to climb up right now.
Yeah.
So exciting stuff for precious minerals holders out there right now. We've got more news to get to here on your Thursday. We're going to talk about why Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates wants you to eat fake meat, and they're investing billions in it to make that happen. Also, is Justin Trudeau about to resign? Why is he telling people that he is under pressure and this is he's incredibly bored and he thinks about quitting every day? This all comes right at an interesting moment on this massive carbon tax that's about to hit Canadians, which could devastate their economy. We're going to look at that. But first, we're looking at interest rates right now. Three slashings of interest rates we could be seeing this year, according to the Fed, as we just talked about. That is good news for a lot of people, right? But the Fed seems like they're in a real bind. If you heard what the Fed chief was saying, of course, he's on the one hand saying inflation is sticky. It's going to be here. Probably won't hit those 2% targets anymore. But at the same time, we're going to slash interest rates. He's walking a real fine line here right now. So while your cash is sort of sitting there, and actually we see a record number of Americans right now who are sitting on savings. They've actually saved a lot because they don't know what to do with their money. Well, while it's sitting there not doing anything and you're not investing it, why not put it in Moomoo's cash sweep account and earn 8.1% right now? Yeah, you're not investing it. You just open an account and you can move your extra money that you have in a crappy savings account where you get 0.001%. Move it over to Moomoo and you can get 8.1% right now as part of their cash sweep account. Just go to redacted.inc/Moomoo. And their base rate is 5.1%. But right now, for a limited time, they're adding an additional 3% on top of that. So 8.1% while it's sitting there. And then, of course, when you do want to invest in something, your cash is right inside the trading app and you can make an investment. It's totally up to you. You can start investing in anything you want, commodities, precious minerals companies. It's totally up to you. And you get 15 free stocks when you sign up. Go to redacted.inc/Moomoo. Take advantage of the 15 free stocks plus the 8.1% APY right now for your parked money while you're waiting on what to do with it right now. So again, that's redacted.inc/Moomoo.
Well, Jeff Bezos wants to compete with Bill Gates to get you to eat fake meat. Why do these unelected globalists keep pushing this processed meat on you? Well, They want it. They think it's the future. The Bezos Earth Fund announced an initial $60 million commitment to establish Bezos Centers for Sustainable Protein. That's what they're calling it. Bezos' fiance, Lauren Sanchez, is the vice chair of this association, and she announced this last week at the Aspen Ideas Climate Conference.
Finally, one last question that we're thinking a lot about. How do we feed 10 billion people with healthy, sustainable protein throughout this century? This will need a ton of innovation. We're investing heavily in livestock sector and inventions that will give consumers meat options that are better for the earth. I am thrilled to announce, very excited about this one tonight, $60 million to establish Bezos Centers for Sustainable Protein that will help grow these ideas. Their inventions will make plant-based lab-grown meats cheaper, healthier, and tastier. And these sustainable proteins really are getting better. Trust me, I've had one, and they are getting so good. You can hardly tell the difference now. I really like them. Anyway, these examples barely scratch the surface of what's possible when we combine hope with action, ingenuity with determination.
And all the processing goes right into my face and my lips and my cheeks.
Oh, we're going to talk about her in a second.
Where's the charts on that?
Trust me, she's had one.
Yeah, I've had one. I barely noticed.
What an endorsement.
I know.
Trust me, I had one.
It's getting better.
It's getting better. I barely noticed that it was crap.
Right. I think that history is going to look back on this as an incredibly arrogant moment where humans thought that they could do better than nature with labs. So let's just sort of unpack what she's saying there and what she's trying to push on us. She's saying that meat is terrible for the planet because climate activists say that meat is responsible for 14.5% of annual global greenhouse gas emissions. That is a global average, meaning it takes into account well-run agricultural countries like the United States with non-developed countries that have a higher carbon output because they are not as efficient. And in fact, yeah, you could reinvent meat, or you could teach the rest of the world to farm better, like the United States and the United Kingdom. That's also a good idea. In fact, in the UK, beef production is only responsible for 4% of greenhouse gas emissions. And in the US, it's as low as 2.2%. So keep that number in mind, the fact that the United States is so good at agricultural farming, specifically livestock farming, that it's only 2% of annual greenhouse gas emissions. So that 14.5% number is misleading, and climate alarmists know it. Here's a chart from the EPA showing, in fact, that beef emissions only add up to 2.2%. So why? Again, because in the US, we get more efficient every single year. And according to the beef industry, they say doing more with less has decreased US beef emissions intensity by 29%. And total carbon emissions by 30% since 1975. So consider how low that number is, 2%. Can lab-grown meat do any better? They cannot. And in fact, we already know it. In April of 2023, this study came out of UC Davis showing that lab-grown meat has a much higher carbon footprint than traditional livestock-farmed meat. Researchers at UC Davis found what's called ACBM, or animal cell-based meat, is much worse for the environment than traditional meat, because instead of, oh, something that lives in nature, eats grass, contributes to carbon sink, instead you need this whole process. Now, I don't completely understand it, but I don't think that's better than a cow standing in a farm, do you? So all of this processing of things that come from fields of monocrop culture, of monocrop fields, it's not at all better for the earth. And in fact, the researchers say that the results indicate that the environmental impact of this ACBM production is likely to be orders of magnitude higher than medium beef production and is highly refined growth medium utilized for ACBM production. And in fact, they said that lab-grown meat could increase global warming between 4 and 25 times more than retail beef. So Why do you think Jeff Bezos and Lawrence Sanchez think that this is the solution? Have they not seen this paper? Do they really think that their laboratories are going to do better than well-run agricultural farming? Wouldn't the obvious solution be to take the countries that are not efficient with agricultural livestock farming and teach them to do it more efficiently? Doesn't that seem, is that painfully obvious to anybody else here?
Yes.
Bueller?
Yes.
Bueller? Right? Okay. But the Bezos Earth Fund is saying, oh no, we're really concerned about methane. And in fact, they've launched a methane satellite into the sky a few weeks ago. And they're doing that because they want to share all this data with us. Watch.
I don't know if you know this, but think about it. Methane has caused 30% of global warming. So how are we going to fix it? This is how. We're going to start right here with MethaneSat. It's a game-changing satellite we support with the Environmental Defense Fund. Now, before MethaneSat launched into orbit just last week, it just happened. It was so exciting to watch it go up in the air. We weren't able to see the big picture of where and how bad the methane leaks are. But because of the brilliant minds who figured out a better way, we now have innovative technology which we can see and measure leaks like never before. It's actually incredible. And we're really proud of this data because we're going to make it free for everyone, which is good for those working hard to cut their emissions.
Okay. Great. So they
launch about 3 to 4 methane satellites a day.
Oh.
Yeah. Launch a methane bomb. There's going to be a red target over your house.
Right.
Now they're going to start tracking us, like the global poop map.
Yeah. They're going to be watching your house.
Why is that guy so hot?
You know what? The thing is, they're going to limit your Amazon purchases based on your methane output. That's what Bezos is going to do to you from now on.
That they're scanning your house and like, nope, too much out of that house. Yeah. We're going to shut them down. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't point this out because Lauren Sanchez is trending today on X because of this red carpet appearance. Some people are saying that, well, she looks a little masculine. Maybe she's, you know, had plastic surgery to change her gender.
No, she hasn't had any surgery.
I don't. That's what's trending online. But I think, I don't think she's a man. I think she's just a woman who's had a ton of plastic surgery and does not look like a 54-year-old middle-aged woman wouldn't otherwise look. My point being, not to be mean, she should look like this if she wants to, right? She's rocking it. She's loving her pretty clothes and her rich fiance, but she may not be the role model for natural living that we might want to follow her diet, right? She's got a lot of processed aftermarket stuff, so she may be more willing to eat processed meat than other people.
She goes into some sort of chamber every night.
I see it as like, have you seen the movie Snowpiercer with Chris Evans?
No.
Where you've got like, it's basically like an allegory on American society. But like in the back of this train, which is all of human civilization now lives on this one train. And in the back, they all eat these protein bars because they're in a closed environment. And they come to find out the protein bars are made by bugs or made from bugs. And then they break out of the back of the train as they move to the front of the train. They find the people in the front of the train. They have live chickens. They have an aquarium where they can get actual fresh sushi. And so it's like, you know, this is what this reminds me of is, you know, that the Bezos and these people that are billionaires are not going to be eating this lab grown meat. They're still going to get their cows, their chickens, their eggs. And it's just going to be everybody. They want everybody else to do it.
It's communism.
That's how it is.
It's communism in action, right? It doesn't work because the proletariat will eat bugs, right? Mm-hmm. And the elites will eat real foods, right?
Yeah. And I don't know if she ever tried to be an actress at all, but that the lab grown meat is actually delicious. I didn't buy it. That was not good acting. So you can tell Philip is right. She means for you to eat it. She's not really going to eat it. Now, this is also a platform of Bill Gates. So these two midlife crisis billionaires are on the same wavelength with the synthetic beef. Here's an interview that Bill Gates did recently with MIT Review, saying that he thinks synthetic beef is the way of the future. But he doesn't actually think the poorest 80 countries will be eating synthetic meat. He thinks all rich countries should eat synthetic beef. He says you can get used to the taste difference, and the claim is that they're going to make it taste even better, so rich countries should be eating synthetic beef, which is completely opposite because it's the rich countries that can produce beef with the lowest carbon output. What is he studying? I think he's just not. And also, you know, they're selling this to you as we know you need protein, so we're going to push this synthetic protein on you. Only protein is not really the main macronutrient that we need from meat. And researchers are trying to warn us about this. In fact, Harvard-trained doctor and author Georgia Eddy warns this in her new book, Change Your Diet, Change Your Mind. And she told the Daily Mail that it's less about proteins and more about the micronutrients that you cannot get from plants. She's talking about, like, yes, you can get protein from vegetables, but you can't get some of the other, she says, essential nutrients that are much more difficult, if not in some cases impossible, to obtain from plants. She noted that meat is the only food that contains every nutrient we need in its proper form, and also the safest food for our blood sugar and insulin levels. True, it does not spike your insulin. These nutrients include vitamin B12, omega-3 fatty acids, zinc, choline, iron, and iodine. You can get synthetic versions, and maybe that's what they'll put in their lab-grown meat. But in fact, there is also a lot of research showing that a meat-free diet can be linked to depression and anxiety. Here are some of the things that I'm actually quite shocked that the Daily Mail linked to these stories. I'm not going to read them all, but there's so many out there showing that, in fact, a meat-free diet is linked to depression and anxiety. Pause this screen and seek out those stories for yourself, or just seek out this Daily Mail story. So Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates and Lauren Sanchez, eat that processed stuff if you want to. Do what you want to your body. Do what you want, right? I don't care, but I do not want any part of this. Let us know how much you want in on their fake meat project.
All right. Yeah, no fake meat for me. I will not touch it with a 10-foot cattle prod. All right. What else have we got coming up on the show? We're going to talk about Justin Trudeau quitting. He's been talking about it recently, and he's been talking about it in French, which he tends to do when he wants to get information out there in hopes that, I guess, people, I don't know how he does. He sort of puts it out there like a trial balloon. This is where he called the trucker convoy racist and misogynistic. He did that in French. He's also talking about resigning, or thinks about resigning, the office of the prime ministership in Canada. We're going to get to that in a second. But first, we have a newsletter that you should all subscribe to. It's totally free. It's the best newsletter in the world, if I do say so myself. It's a great way to start your morning. Get it, you know, about 7 or 8 in the morning over your cup of coffee, and great way to start your day. You can read it in about 5 or 10 minutes. It's written by us, just the two of us, just Natalie and I, no one else. We keep the woke crap out of it, and we just focus on the news that you can use. We cover a few stories plus things you missed overnight, some market news, information about gold, silver, what's going on with Bitcoin and the markets and stuff overnight while you were sleeping. And again, it's a great way to start your day. Go to redacted.inc. That's the place to go. That's the website, not .com. It's .inc. Put in your email address. You will receive a welcome email from us. You have to confirm that you want the newsletter, though. So look for your spam folder, your junk folder, and then click on confirm. And then on Monday morning, when we publish the newsletter again, Monday morning, Monday through Thursday, then you'll receive it in your inbox on Monday. So go to redacted.inc. Well, Canadians are getting very excited about the prospect that Justin Trudeau, the prime minister, is about to resign. Yes, is Justin Trudeau going to resign? Well, he just did an interview where he was speaking in French and wanted to let Canadians know that he finds the job incredibly boring and that he often thinks about resigning on a regular basis. So is Prime Minister Trudeau about to resign? Are we getting our hopes up?
Canadians are not the only ones suffering. Justin Trudeau has it very tough. Did you hear about this? He's a little bit bored. Did you hear about this? Incredible, this quote. I got to read these quotes here for today. He said this in French in an interview with Rad Ken. He said, I think about quitting every day. Oh, isn't that funny? We think about firing him every day.
Oh, my God. Let's bring in, from Ottawa, Canada, David Creighton, independent journalist, who's been watching this. And David, I have to ask you, it's very interesting to me. I know over the past couple of years, Trudeau has managed to do a couple of interviews where he does them in French. And I remember we've had to translate some of them, but they end up being some of his most controversial interviews. But he does them in French. I guess he thinks that no one will pay attention, or no one can use a translating app, or no one can translate what he's saying here. So what actually happened here?
Yeah, you're quite right. He does do these interviews in French where he says things that are potentially very embarrassing for him. And he's done this in the past. But what happened last week? He did an interview with Radio-Canada, which is the French CBC. And it was all in French. There was no English. And he made a number of very surprising and arguably very stupid statements. You know, he said that he thinks about quitting, and he said quitting every day as prime minister. He said that he finds the job, and the word he used in French was super plat, which means it translates to super boring. He finds the job of prime minister being super boring. He said the only reason he stays on, and he talked about all the hardships he's had to endure, which a lot of people just rolled their eyes at, saying he's talking about hardships.
Right. He's the victim. He's the victim here.
He paints himself as the victim in this interview and says he's got to stick to it because he's got to see these policies through. And of course, the policies he's really talking about, the ones he really cares about the most, are the LGBTQ, gender ideology, giving billions to Ukraine, and keeping a euthanasia program going. Those seem to be the policies he's really committed to, along with economic catastrophe. But he has in the past, as you pointed out at the beginning, said things in these French interviews that he really pretends he didn't say. For instance, he called the unvaccinated and the participants in the Freedom Convoy racist and misogynistic. That was the first reference to this, was in a French interview. And of course, he lied about saying that repeatedly, including on the witness stand at the Emergencies Act inquiry. He was grilled by the Freedom Convoy lawyer, Eva Chepiuk, and he lied about having said this. And of course, when I covered the story, I just merely replayed the video of him saying that. That's exactly what he did. He called them names. And this is what he often does in French. So the interview is really galvanizing, if it needed to be galvanized anymore, opinion against Trudeau, because here's a guy who's 20 points down in the polls against Pierre Poilievre. His Liberal Party is 20 points behind the Conservative Party. And he's talking about quitting? I think a lot of Liberals are going to be saying, hey, you want to quit, brother? It's time you quit because you're doing the party no good. And I think most Canadians think he's doing Canada no good. But he's in a vulnerable position. And to admit that he thinks about quitting every day, well, I think that's an open door to say bye-bye.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is why I find it interesting, because, well, he's saying that you don't, I mean, these guys don't say anything out of turn, right? This is all calculated and it's on purpose. So why is he saying this? Why is he, is this sort of a trial balloon here to see if Liberals have anyone else they want to put forth and get him out of there? We know, obviously, he's separated from his wife. I mean, who knows what's going on there? So he's playing the victim here, that it's been, you know, detrimental to his family. And he wants to step aside. Is this a trial balloon? I always think about these things in terms of American politics as well. When you hear these stories being pushed out there, there's something else is going on here. So do you think Liberals are lining up another candidate?
There doesn't seem to be a clear alternative to Justin Trudeau, even amongst Liberals. Chrystia Freeland is obviously mentioned. She's the deputy prime minister, but she's loathed in circles because of her condescending attitude towards ordinary Canadian. I mean, she's so supercilious. So I don't think there's a clear candidate to replace him. And what's strange is that as we speak today, there's going to be a non-confidence vote in the House of Commons. It doesn't happen every week or every month. This is a significant event brought up by Pierre Poilievre on the basis that the carbon tax, you know, this incredible tax that Canadians pay on their heating bills, on their gasoline at the pump, on all fossil fuel energy, and even including hydroelectricity, that this is forming the basis of a non-confidence motion in the House of Commons today. It was supposed to be last night. Things got pushed to tomorrow. It got too late. But Trudeau is maniacal right now in the House during question period about his insistence that only he understands what's best for Canada. Only Justin Trudeau knows what Canadians need. So he is grasping at power right now. He's not looking like a man who wants to leave of his own volition by any means. And his attitude in the House right now is hysterical. And he literally knocked the glass of water off of his desk yesterday onto his another cabinet minister's working space, and there's water everywhere. He seems to be so pumped up on whatever it is he's using right now. And I don't know what else to say except that he does not look like a man who wants to leave. He really believes that the carbon tax is saving Canada from the perils of the of climate change.
Well, how disaster, is this going to affect how is this going to affect average Canadians, this carbon tax? I mean, what will they end up paying here?
Well, in British Columbia, they're already paying over $2 a liter, not gallon, liter for gasoline.
Wow.
So it means in Ontario here, we'll be paying about $1.80. That's what it really comes down to. I mean, that's a heck of a lot of money to pay for gas every time. And of course, it goes on your heating bill. Now, Trudeau is also lying when he says Canadians get back more than they pay, or at least equal amounts than they pay in this so-called carbon rebate. But the parliamentary budget officer revealed this week that that's a sham. That's not the case. It's Canadians are paying twice as much as they ever get back in this little stipend of a Trudeau rebate. And he's lying about that too. So it's incredible economic hardship on Canadians, but even worse, it's an economic hardship on business, and especially farms. Farms are paying like literally $80,000 a month in taxes.
Wow.
Just to heat their farm area, the barns, mushroom farms, for instance, $80,000 a month, a local mushroom farmer in Ottawa is paying on. So it is incredibly destructive, this tax. And Trudeau seems to be wanting to fall on his sword over it. Now, whether or not he's going to get the NDP support in this non-confidence motion or not, I don't know. There seems to be some wavering there. Most of the provinces in Canada now are united against the carbon tax because it is creating economic disorder and tremendous hardship for ordinary people who just want to drive their cars and heat their homes, or in the summer, of course, air condition their homes if they have that luxury.
Yeah, I just don't understand how you can say this job is boring. Seems to me if you're Prime Minister of Canada with all of the problems you currently have, maybe it's boring because he's created a lot of these problems. And so now he can sit back and he doesn't have much else to do other than watch Canada spiral into the ground right now. Well, one can only hope that he resigns and we'll see what happens down 20 points. We'll keep our eyes on this, and we'll keep our eyes on this carbon tax. Obviously, the Biden administration doubling down as well on the green agenda. So maybe these puppets in the World Economic Forum and the globalists are trying to keep these guys in charge until they can push and ram through this agenda. David, great to see you.
What?
Yeah, go ahead, David.
I was just going to say, Clayton, it's interesting that BBC broke this story because
right
everywhere Trudeau goes in the world, he makes enemies. And the country that hates him the most right now is India. Every time right. he goes to India, he makes an ass of himself. What did he do when he was last, well, in Britain, very infamously, the night before the state funeral for Queen Elizabeth II, he delivers this bizarre piano bar rendition of Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody, looking very, very drunk, shall we say. This was captured by a videographer on the scene. The video went around the world, and once again, it made Justin Trudeau look like a child who doesn't take serious events very seriously. And I wouldn't doubt for a minute that Trudeau's enemies in the British press, and there are several, and they are a lot, wanted to get him on this interview. And I think that's exactly what they've done. So you make enemies around the world the way Justin Trudeau has, and the chickens come home to roost.
Friends Who needs friends? What is this saying? Who needs friends when you've got with enemies like this, right? Yeah, that's right. David, great to see you. We appreciate it as always.
Thank you so much, Clayton.
All right, everyone. Well, that's going to do it for Redacted on this Thursday. We hope that you had a wonderful week here. Much better week than Apple is doing, being sued by the Department of Justice for a monopoly over their iPhone. Mm. So I don't think that's going to go well for them. We've got a lot of news that we're going to be covering through the weekend and on into the early part of next week. So thank you guys so much for being a part of our show. We really, really appreciate it. Head over to redacted.inc to become part of our community. And we'll be back here on Monday with another live show. Again, have a great weekend, everyone.